Starting now.
All right.
Yeah.
We shouldn't have talked all that before the show.
Ramp it up.
Because that was all the good stuff about your tire and the flooring and everything. That was all off mic.
Right. Now I got nothing left. I'm exhausted.
Yeah. I get. Yeah. We'll just we'll roll. Hello and welcome to episode 310 of the Two Hosers Photo Show. My name is Alan in Tubingen, Germany. With me, as always, is
Adam, living large in Vancouver.
Is it snowing, Adam?
It is. Or it was. I don't know. I'm not looking out the window, but it has been all day.
It's been snowcopalypse? Snowpocalypse?
Sure.
Snowageddon?
Snowageddon, yeah. I think so. It seems that way. I went to pick up the kids from school today, and you would have thought that we were, you know, basically living in Antarctica based on how people were dressed. It was pretty ridiculous. I wanted to start taking snapshots of what the parents were wearing. And I was thinking it was maybe three, like, I don't know. No, I'm not going to say minus. It was maybe zero. Yeah. Somewhere between plus one and minus one, let's say. But oh my gosh, the high boots and the parkas and the toques and, yeah, the disaster plans. Yeah. It was pretty magnificent, actually. Yeah.
We catch there's a lot of flack that we West Coasters get when it snows.
Yes.
One of the things, and in defense of these people, which I don't really typically want to defend them because they look goofy. However, we generally don't get, like, you don't get many of these days in the year. Yet you don't when it snows, you don't want to go out in your tennis shoes, right?
Correct.
So you do want to have your boots. However, you only have it 3 days of the year, so you kind of want to get your money's worth.
I guess so. That's one way of looking at it. Yeah,
I think that's what people are doing. They're saying, "All right, this is my shot. I'm wearing my new scarf. Like, that's all I got. I can't wear it. You know, in 3 days, I can't wear it."
Right.
Because I remember being a kid when it snowed. I never bothered getting I guess my mom would have bought me boots, but she would have bought me the worst kind. So I never bothered. I didn't want those lousy boots from Zellers. No offense, Zellers. But so I would wear, like, you know, running shoes and just have wet, cold feet for 2 days out of the year. No point, because she wouldn't buy me the nice Sorels, like, right, like all the cool kids had.
Right.
So I would walk to school in, you know, tennis shoes and just be cold for 15 minutes each way. That would be it.
Yeah.
So I appreciate everyone getting their money's worth. But the other thing that I do take issue with is the rest of the country gets on their high horse when it comes to driving.
Oh, you Vancouver, you guys can't drive in the snow. You guys just, you know, one centimeter and you guys just freak out.
It's kind of the truth, though.
Partially true. However, in defense, having driven here, like here in Germany, when it snows, the snow we get in Vancouver, not the same snow.
No.
It is a very, very slippery, wet snow. Compared to here in Germany, like here you can drive in the snow.
Yes.
I'm not a meteorologist, but it's my estimation that in Vancouver the ground, because the temperatures aren't that cold, the ground doesn't get and stay cold like it does in the middle of Canada or middle of Europe, and thus once the snow hits, it kind of melts a little bit, just a little bit.
Yeah.
And creates that thin, viscous layer. And it is a problem. So I can tell you firsthand, driving there, very different than driving anywhere else.
Okay, so you're basically making an excuse for all the terrible drivers in Vancouver who can't drive in the snow.
I wouldn't go that far.
Okay.
There are people who now, on the other hand, people do freak out.
They do.
There is that.
Everybody and their uncle got snow tires in the last 3.5 days, which mm-hmm. is kind of ridiculous based on the amount of snow we actually get. Now, I get it if you're driving, you know, you live in the North Shore and you're driving up and down in the mountains and off-roading or whatnot. But for city driving here, I'm pretty sure if you have half decent all seasons for the week's worth of snow we're actually going to get, just drive a little bit slower and leave lots of stopping distance and you're going to be okay.
Yes, I've done that. I used to be the guy driving his pickup truck on bald summer tires.
Don't do that. I'm not advocating that.
Well, I did that. Yeah. I did that. I mean, but basically my move, this is the hot move, by the way. If you drive a pickup truck, which no one really does anymore, but I used to drive the pickup truck. And again, tires were so bald at some spots you could see the air coming out. It was terrible.
Okay.
But when you go to shovel your driveway, shovel the snow into the back of the pickup truck. That gives you that nice weight for when you're driving. No, it weighs you down and you get good traction.
Perfect. And, yeah, we call that traction control.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, it's old school. That's how I used to do it. And make sure you pack it along the rear axle and you're good to go.
Okay.
That was the move. yeah, but again, I think the whole economy, like they say in Vancouver, oh well, yeah, well, we don't have, you know, we don't have the snow plows and the salt trucks to deal with it, nor should we.
Right.
Like, if you think about it, for what it costs to have all those things ready to go, is very expensive. It's actually cheaper if everybody just takes 3 days off of work.
Yeah, I agree.
Just stay home and don't get paid. It's probably long run. Same with your snow tires. Rather than go buy snow tires for that day and a half, just go ahead, take the day off, don't get paid, you'll save money.
Yeah, probably. I agree. I think it's a little bit silly and reactive. That's the way we are.
Mm-hmm. Versus here in Germany, which you have to have. If you get into an accident after a certain date and you don't have winter tires on, your insurance does not pay.
I getcha. Because it's different, you know. You have what, a couple months worth of it, right?
Yeah, it's nowhere near. It's nowhere. It's not crazy here, but you can get those conditions, and they mandate that. Yeah, everybody has winter tires.
Yeah,
and then you take them off in, I don't know, whenever it is, March. You have them switched out, and that's that. And then you're driving on your summer. So everybody has two sets of tires. It's a thing here,
right?
Versus, you know, all season radio. Anyways,
yeah.
Enough tire talk.
Tire talk. I'm tired.
Amazon.
Of it.
If you are going to buy snow tires, and we actually recommend that you do, click through our site on Amazon. I bet you they have snow tires.
Sure.
Do they?
Maybe.
All right.
I'm going to say yes.
230. What do you got? What do you got in yours? 215. What? How big are yours? Do you even know? 185s.
Yeah, I don't know.
A little car, 185, 15.
I have 17-inch rims. That's what I know.
Are they 17s?
Yeah, on the Toyota. Yeah.
Did you get the low profile, like low rider snow tires?
No.
With the spinners.
Yes.
Glow. Do you have glowing spinners?
Christmas
for the snow tires?
Spinners. Yeah.
That would look awesome.
Yeah, I should have asked about that.
If you are going to get those, definitely click through our site and help us out.
Okay.
We've already started with what's going on, so let's power through and get some more of that done.
Donald Trump.
Donald Trump. Yeah. Did you see the cover of Time magazine?
I just did. That's why I was thinking about it.
Are your thoughts?
It's pretty funny.
Did you read the controversy, or did you see the image and think, oh, wow?
I saw the image and somebody on the internet had it circled, and I thought, that's peculiar where they circled. And then I started reading a chain of comments underneath, and I thought, yeah, that's I wouldn't have caught it at first glance, but it's pretty funny.
I didn't get a chance to see it, the cover, until I actually read about it with the controversy. So I didn't have a chance for it to sink in on my own.
Right.
So I don't know. I don't know that I would have caught it either. However, on purpose or not?
It's tough to say. I mean, it could have gone either way. I don't know. I could see easily having slid this in the back, and it's the middle of the page. That's just kind of where the words fall. So I could see just sort of a funny accident, but I could also see it being intentional.
it has to be intentional.
I don't know. I'm not convinced it has to be.
It's the reason for it. The reason I think it has to be intentional is the symmetry of it. If it was unintentional, or if they intentionally tried to not do it, they would have perhaps shifted him a few millimeters either way, and the M would not have been symmetrical on his head.
But yeah.
If you look on either side, it's pretty close to being perfect. Perfect. His head is perfectly centered on that M to make that effect happen.
Yeah, I just think if they really wanted to do that, they could have easily taken a more head-on shot, right?
True.
So just the fact that he's posed at such an angle right away says, do you think it's two different people that do it? The guy that does the photo has nothing to do with the layout with the font and the text?
I think it's 18 different people.
Yeah, you're probably right.
We're all involved.
Yeah.
I'm sure there's some talk at the beginning. I'm assuming they sit down and plan this out and basically do a mock-up. Like a sketch of, okay, here's what we're generally going for. So the photographer needs to, because it's not like with Donald Trump, you can't just sit down and have 2 hours with him and basically try a bunch of stuff and see what works. You probably have 5 minutes in the chair,
maybe.
So you're going to get set up while he's in makeup. You'll be getting all set up, have a stand in, bring him in, shoot him, and go. So you have to plan out ahead of time what you're going to do.
Yeah, it's also, I mean, the rest of that cover is very dark and gloomy. They kept to keep the shadow in on the wall. His one side of his face is completely in darkness. It's a very peculiar, basically, setup for a presidential picture. I never would have thought that this would be the angle they would want to take, or he would agree, or he would agree to, right?
Yeah.
It's
I don't know. Yeah, yeah, you're right. It's not super flattering.
No, not at all. And it's sort of a little bit, forget the lettering and the horns and whatnot. It's just kind of an evil looking photo.
Yes.
As opposed to, yes, I'm looking at another Time magazine photo. I'm actually looking at a few because he's been on the cover many times. When you pull it up in Google Images, you see all kinds of different Donald Trump covers of Time magazine, and none of them are even close to this. they're much more flattering images. So it is interesting that this was the creative decision to go this route.
I'm okay with it.
Yeah, I am too. I'm just surprised he was okay with it.
Yeah, I'd like to think he has better things to worry about.
Maybe.
Probably doesn't.
Twitter. What he's going to say on Twitter.
Twitter.
Yeah.
Oh man, my Twitter's blowing up.
Yeah.
That they should have had him doing the tweeting while he was in the photo.
Yeah,
that would have been, but that would have been too much. That would have been too obvious. I think they wanted to go much more subtle. But anyways, I think it was on purpose. I don't know if necessarily from the very beginning. I think maybe whoever did the layout saw their opportunity and said, well, we could make this happen.
Yeah, I would think too. Wouldn't they have somebody, do you think, that's the entire position is to just approve and say, you know, whether or not this is okay. Any publicity that goes out on behalf of Donald Trump is kind of okayed by his I don't know if it's a publicist or who it is, but maybe he has multiple. I don't get how this gets by everybody.
Yeah.
That part's weird.
Not that he's get approval.
Yeah. You must have to get it approved.
Why?
Just because they protect everything to do with image nowadays, especially with the president.
Right. Okay, then don't be on the cover. You want to be person of the year, or don't you?
Yeah.
So yeah. I don't know how that. I mean, that whole industry. That's a whole other episode, man. That we're not going to do today
or ever
about how or ever. Well, no, we might because I'm interested in how this happens, how image happens. Having dealt with it on a couple of very much smaller levels, obviously, than the president. You know, but just dealing with our own press here in Germany for baseball, I'm in the paper a fair bit every week for our team, and the stuff they get wrong and our overall image, the way they control it, is terrible. Like the little things that they get wrong and the little, like the images they pick to run in the paper, they don't jive. And these are, it's not a big deal obviously for us, but and this is just on a very, very low level. These aren't the high-paid people at time. But I do see it, and then having talked to Mr. Carolla about it, he deals with the same thing on a much higher level than I do, about having the, you know, how the image is. You try to control your image, but it just, you know, essentially mistruths get out there. And so on this kind of level, like, yeah, I can see it being even larger. The end.
Okay.
Anyway, bottom line is, I say intentional. Moving on, we got some Christmas cards. One of our listeners, a guy named Joe Russo, I checked. He said we could say his name.
Okay. Joe.
Big Joe. He said he takes some cool Christmas cards with his kids, and he was nice enough to share. You talked about him a couple of weeks in the show, right? A couple of weeks ago.
Yeah, I had mentioned that a listener had sent us some of his Christmas cards, and they're pretty fantastic. So I think I don't think we discussed them in any depth. I think you mentioned, you know, a little bit about what they were, and I said, yeah, they're awesome, and that's where we left it.
We wanted to get his permission to show them. That was a thing.
Okay.
He sent his latest one, too. And we got his permission, and he sent the last 4 years.
Okay.
So let's have a look here. We won't go through all of them, but...
So tell me which one I should look at right now.
Start at the beginning, 2013.
Okay, 2013. Oh, that one's pretty good. I like that one.
I like that. I think this is where it all started. I like what's going on here. Now, he told us this is obviously a composite.
Yes, I hope so.
Hopefully.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or phoning child services. I like what's going on here. If this shows up at your house, especially unannounced, it's going to win. It's going to win best Christmas card on your mantle.
For sure it is. This is pretty, yeah. This is pretty tough to top. So you're going to post these to sort of say what's going on, but you know, they've got their small child. I'm going to guess maybe about, I don't know, less than a year old at this point,
right,
based on my baby, eyes. And they've got him putting the star on the tree, but they've got two stools haphazardly stacked, and then the baby is on top reaching for the star and about to fall, and the parents are in awe and scared and screaming, and it's great. And looking at it first glance, it looks like it's a real photo just based on the shadows and mm-hmm. how he's put it together. He's paid a lot of attention to detail because the light looks like it's just a snapshot.
Yes.
So good. Agreed. On you, Joe. That's great. This is the kind of thing that when people look at it, they're going to love it. And it's because of all those little details that you can't tell. Well, you hope that it's not real, but but it looks
well,
real.
I think
it looks real.
Yeah. Yeah. The look on the kid's face says, yeah, he's enjoying it.
Yeah.
He doesn't know what's going to happen, though.
And I don't want to... I could put together... I could reverse engineer how this is done, but I don't even want to. I just want to accept it for what it is, is photography magic.
Yes. Agreed.
Okay.
Then the next year, not as much drama.
No. No.
No.
I'm not... Go ahead.
Let's skip ahead then to 2014 when... evidently, Caden got a little sister.
I do like 2014, though, but you're right. It's very simple.
It is good. Nothing wrong with 2014, but in, you know.
They stepped it up a notch again for 2015.
Yes. So, yeah. So now going for the star. I like what's going on here. Because I take a picture of my kids putting the star up every year, which is essentially me holding them up there. But this year I'm going to go with the fishing rod.
Yeah, it's again, it's great, and great detail with the shadows once again to make it look like mm-hmm. this is all one shot.
Yeah, and the look on the kid's face, fantastic.
Yeah,
I do like the one who's being fished.
Yes, yeah,
love
I agree.
What's going on there,
and the fisherman as well.
Oh yeah, yeah, no. Caden's definitely enjoying it. I say this because their names are right on there.
Yeah.
I don't know them.
No.
No. All right. And then this year, so he sent off this year's right hot off the press and took it up a notch with the trampoline.
Yeah, I like this one,
which
too.
Which I like.
Yeah, I do as well.
Like the fake motion blur. I'm going to go ahead and guess that, that his wife said, okay, they don't want to be in it anymore.
Yeah.
The two of them.
That's what it looks like.
So they stepped out. But I do also like the fact that he could have very easily just had the kids on the trampoline and not had the setup part where they're jumping off the table and chairs. But that's an important part of it. That's how they got up there.
To create this kind of momentum to get up to the top of the tree, yeah.
So the attention to detail is fantastic. I do like that.
I agree.
So
very well done,
good job, Joe.
Yeah.
Thanks for sharing.
Very creative.
Mm-hmm.
It gets tough, though, because, you know, now you're trying to kind of one-up yourself, and that's pretty tough sledding because, I mean, where you started, that 2013 one is pretty great. And, you know, I've had my own issue with this sometimes. Like, I come up with a really good Christmas card one year, and I've sort of looked back at all the ones my mama has them on her fridge, and I'm like, oh, man, I really like that one. And then some years just aren't quite as good, but you always kind of are thinking of, I need another good idea, something different to kind of, you know, wow the fans out there.
And then when you again, it's a good Christmas card, but it's not up to snuff with your best.
No.
Just think, man, am I getting worse at this?
Yeah.
Like,
I'm getting decent at spending little time.
Yeah, I could be putting this in a better perspective.
Yeah, I'm saving myself a lot of time. That's what I'm doing. Yeah.
That's a good point. Well, I feel the same way with birthday invites has been the big one, you know. So I'm getting to the point now where now I've done 8 birthday invites for the kids collectively.
Right.
And now I'm like, just show up at 2. That's really all you need to do. Be here at 2.
Yeah.
Do you need a portrait shot? No, you don't. Come on.
I agree.
Yeah. So I'm getting worse. The answer is yes, I'm getting worse. All right. Did you shoot anything interesting this week?
I think maybe I did. I'm trying to remember. I thought there was a couple of photos of something, but now I'm drawing a blank. Was that last week? Maybe it was. I'm going to just say no for now, unless you tell me something and then I remember something interesting I shot.
I don't think I've shot much. This is we're recording this a little bit early for those of you. No, this one's on time, actually. This one comes out Monday. We have a couple other ones in the can. That's what's confusing me. So right now, you know, we're a week and a half into December. I don't know about you, but I'm trying to get stuff crossed off the list so that it's not crazy hectic around Christmas.
Right.
I would like to take a few days off and do nothing around Christmas. That's my goal. That's my present to myself.
I think that's an excellent idea.
And so it comes down to getting stuff done, which means not as many photos as I would like. Have started taking some. There's been a few things, like just the kids doing stuff that they haven't done. You know, for us, it's we have the Advent calendar where the kids get a gift every day.
Right.
Like a little, I say gift, it's like it's something small usually, but nothing to write home about. But I made sure to get, you know, a couple of those. I don't shoot them every day, of course, because it's kind of the same thing. But early on, the first couple days of the Advent, try to get a couple of those, lock them away. I think it's just crossing photos off the list at this point.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how creative I'm being. It's just like, well, better get a shot of that.
Yeah. I took a snow photo. That was it. That was my photo.
Yeah.
I thought about it. Something interesting. When the snow came down on Monday morning here, the kids ran outside and had to play in it, of course. And fortunately for them, they had a professional development day on the same day as snow coming down. So it was it was a magical alignment of the universal stars. So they ran outside to play, and I thought, okay, I'm going to snap a photo of this. So I did. So that's it. I haven't posted it anywhere, but I will send it to you. It's kind of neat to see Vancouver with so much snow coming.
It is kind of nice. It is nice. Tell you have to shovel it, and then you're all done. Yeah, okay, so we'll skip it. I shot nothing interesting. Maybe perfect. Next week we'll talk about that, or 2 weeks from now, I guess. Photo challenge was holiday season.
Okay.
I figured because, you know, we're right in the middle of the holiday season.
Yeah, why not?
So we call that dovetail. So let's have a look at mine first, just because, hey, why not?
Okay, this to me reminds me of a photo, I think, maybe last year or the year before. This is a photo you've
every
done before.
Year.
You always do this. Okay, it definitely rang true, but was it Sam or maybe it was both of them or something?
Well, I posted them. If you have a look, I posted the previous two.
Maybe I should just look.
Yeah, I put it in there for you.
Okay, so that would be...
This is kind of my...
Yeah, oh, there it is. Nick, I'm looking at 2014. I remember that one. But it was more than one of both of them last year, I remember. Because that one looks like it was... You had the lights all ready to go. They opened the door. Photo trap.
Every year is a photo trap now that I do this. So once we moved into the house, which was, I guess... You know, a little over 2 years ago now. So this is our third Nicholas Day. And for those who aren't familiar, in Germany, it's not quite the same traditions as North America. So we don't, you know, you don't really have Santa Claus. You sort of do. That's a long story. I don't even care about. You know, you do get presents on the 24th, but Santa Claus proper doesn't really come here. He does for my kids because they're Canadian and they get the best of both worlds.
Mm-hmm.
But for here in Germany, the tradition is you clean your boots, put them out on December the 5th in the evening, you put them out, and then on the morning of December the 6th, you come outside and Nicholas has filled your boots with chocolate and, in our case, pajamas. Saint Nick somehow knows to go to Canada and get Roots pajamas for the kids every year.
Wow.
He does a good job on that. Yeah, he's pretty good with the sizes, turns out. So actually, in this year's photo, you can see that's my son coming outside to find that Nicholas has eaten the cookies that we left for him. So that's the empty plate. And he's wearing last year's. If you look, you see he's wearing last year's Roots pajamas. And coming out to find this year's stuffed in his boots.
Wow.
So, yeah, wow, huh?
It's quite a moment for him.
It is a big moment. This is a big moment. Like, the kids are looking forward to this. There's songs about it, about, you know, Nicholas Togg will be here soon, and what a great guy he is. I'm not even joking. Like, that's part of the song.
He'll bring you Canadian pajamas.
That part, we've added that verse. We'll see if it catches on. Okay. They almost didn't get them this year, but because Nicholas was kind of shocked at how expensive Roots pajamas are. But in the end, he bit the bullet and got them.
Okay.
But so this photo, like this, yeah, this is something I do every year, and I'd like to think I'm getting better at it. First year, a little dark.
Yeah, and Lena looks super thrilled to be there.
Yeah, I could have photoshopped her out, but just kind of like blurred out her face or something like that. And the next year, too bright, definitely too bright. And so this year, I try to make this look unlit.
Right.
But it is lit. It's early in the morning. It's like 6:30 in the morning. It's pitch black out. You know, there's no porch light on. So I'm trying to make this, and I changed up the lighting a little bit this year, right to the camera, right, just out of frame is my office that I'm sitting in right now. And so it kind of sticks out. And so there's a side window there. So I basically, you know, the night before on December 5th, I set up a light that'll just kind of basically come blasting out of that window and illuminate the front porch.
Yeah.
And I think up until now, I think I've done a hard light for some reason. And then this year I decided to make it an umbrella to just kind of flood soft light out onto the porch.
Okay.
But because it comes from one, it's still very directional, and I kind of wanted to have, you know, fill in some of the gaps on the left side. So this year I decided to put a flash, just a bare flash that would fire up into basically hit the wall, camera left, hit the wall and the overhang, which is pretty high on the roof. The overhang's two stories there.
Mm-hmm.
And so, but basically we just kind of pump into that and then flood some soft light down to sort of fill in that backside and then make it look so it wasn't so much lit, like it was just kind of there.
Gotcha. No, I think you did well. It looks very natural. I mean, of course, I know that it's lit, but I think at first glance, it doesn't scream, you know, a lit photograph, not at all. So just enough light to see everything. And yeah, it's good. I like the
especially compared to last year.
The problem is that last year you got the perfect reaction, right? So the perfect reaction to me overshadows the lighting setup. So last year's photo is great because of their expressions and all of that. This year you've definitely got a better lighting situation, but you've got so much more subdued child that I'll take last year's over this year's head to head. Let's say that.
Ah, okay. In that respect, sure. I kind of like this year's just because it is a quieter moment. It's not the.
But is that really, like, I don't know, kids and Christmas, is it the quieter moment?
Sometimes.
Yeah, you're wrong. I think you're wrong about this.
The real questions that people should be asking is, A, how come everybody got pajamas but Dad, if you look closely?
Okay.
Dad should have got new boots, evidently. Yeah. That would have been nice.
His boots are troubled.
Well, no, I do have a new pair, but they're not as big, and so it was my daughter who put my boots out for me, and her theory being, well, hey, bigger boots, more candy.
Right.
Good to go. So she put the work boots out. But and this is not my department, but I have to now ask my wife, why do we have dead flowers on our porch? Don't know if we need that decoratively. So
that's fine.
I'll bring it up at the next meeting.
Okay. All right.
Yeah. All right. So have a look at yours again. Oh, see, here you are with Santa.
Yeah, this is at a Christmas breakfast that we went to for my sister-in-law's firm. She works
private function.
Yeah, so they had a kids' Christmas breakfast. So she invites us every year. So I thought, perfect. This is our Santa opportunity. They always have a Santa, and the kids go up and sit on Santa's knee and all that. So I thought, perfect. I'm going to take my Santa photo this way this year. So I did, just bounced flash into the ceiling. They had a high white ceiling, and I basically just, you know, did a straight up bounce. No black foamy thing or anything, because I forgot to bring it in my bag. So this is just straight up bounce. And I decided to go black and white because it made me feel sort of like an old timey photograph. I wanted it to be different, just different than what I typically do. So it's just fine in color. I just thought, hey, for the sake of the holiday challenge, I'm going to go a totally different direction and go with a black and white sort of old timey feel.
Now, my one criticism on that is that it's too good for that. Mm. Look at those old black and white photos. First of all, most of them are square crop, which is, you know, I'm not going to argue that. But the framing on the old people just didn't do that very good of a job. Even professionals, they tended to frame things differently than we do now, I think.
Okay.
And so that's the only thing that gives it away, is that it's actually it's too good compositionally.
I appreciate that. I did take there two photos. I did take a wide angle. This was, I can't remember. I think I want to say it was a 50 mil lens. I don't know. I'm not looking at the metadata. I took one wide shot with their feet and everything in, and they had a photographer there, but it was just, I'm pretty sure, a guy that works for the firm who was doing it. And then he stepped up onto the stage. There was like a stage kind of area where they had this all set up. And so I said, hey, do you mind if I just hop up here too? So I got in close, because obviously was not shooting with a zoom lens. So I got up close to take this photo. So this isn't cropped or anything. This is straight up out of camera. So I really liked this versus the typical wide shot that you would get. And then I said, as soon as I looked at the LCD, I said, perfect. No mall Santa lineups for us.
That's why I asked if it was a private function, because they are really sticky about you taking your own photos.
At
the mall.
Yeah. So this is private function, and which you can tell because it's fake Santa beard. The mall Santa that we have anyways is high class, real beard. Like he's the real deal. So, but the photographer doesn't do this good of a job. So I think
and
I
who
win.
Who cares about the real beard? Is that the issue?
No, that's the setup here and the surroundings far better than the one at the mall. They had a much better, staged area.
Yeah, no, I like it. Now it is very busy, which is kind of the point.
Yeah,
you know, like that I'm okay with that. Like generally, you look at this and go, "Wow, there's a lot going on." That's kind of the mise en scène of this kind of a photo.
Yeah.
So
also, why no, I think I like the closer up version versus the wider one, because you go wider and there's even more stuff everywhere. So
yeah, you can see the nutcrackers on the edge.
And, there's more of them too. Yeah.
Good.
All right.
Good job. Says holidays to me.
Yes.
All right. Topic this week. I talked to Don Komarechka.
More Don.
And more Don. Back-to-back Don.
Wow. Double down on the Don.
And this is shaping up to be a long episode because we sat and talked for a long time about the notion of public domain. What is public domain? Is it public domain? That's kind of the big issue. Is it?
Okay.
And so we get into that. Now, I'm guessing you haven't heard the interview.
No.
Not at this point, because it hasn't existed yet. In the podcast time universe,
yeah.
Right at this point, it doesn't exist yet.
Okay.
Without further ado, here is Don Komarechka.
Is this the first time 2 weeks in a row?
I think so, yeah. I guess I made you feel bad with my comments about not having me on enough, and so here we are again.
No, not at all, no. Also, I think it's the first time in a one-on-one.
Well, yeah, we did a little sort of interview that you interjected with fatherly advice before my daughter was born, and that was wonderful. And by the way, in that comment, you had basically you gave me some great advice, saying that when she goes to bed, don't be quiet around her, be not purposefully loud, but just average everyday background noise. And we've done that, and she sleeps great even in a busy environment. So thank you so much for that advice.
Do you have friends with kids?
Yeah, we've got a few.
And do you have to tiptoe around them, and then you get all smug because you don't have to tiptoe around your own kids?
A little bit of that, yeah.
Yeah. We pretend like it's not a competition, but it's all a competition.
Now, if she's like gone down to sleep at night, that's a different story. I mean, you generally would want to be a little bit more quiet around her. Mm-hmm. But during the day, when she goes down for a nap, it really doesn't matter.
Right. I'm not Earl Woods in the background with an air horn while, you know, in my kid's backswing. But it really is. And I'm glad it worked out for you, because that's a lot of people don't do it. Well, like Adam said last week, everyone, you know, people are getting soft with the no helmets on the ice or whatever it was. But if you tiptoe around your kids, they will not sleep. And so now it's a big deal being able to vacuum while your kid has a nap.
Well, exactly. Or when say if she goes down for a nap and we want to like watch TV or something at the same time, we don't have to put on headphones or something, you know, like it's
right. It's a big deal. Yeah. Yes. Great. Well, I'm glad to hear it worked out for you. Public domain stuff. That's what I want to talk to you about. Let's get into that. We talked a little bit last week about, well, people helping themselves to your stuff.
And it's painful, because typically about once every month or two, I will scour the internet to find uses of my images that I have not allowed, that where my images have been stolen or misappropriated in one way, shape, or form. Primarily for commercial uses is what I'm looking for, because that's what I want to try and stop. It's almost impossible to stop somebody. If they want to take your image and steal it and like post it as their Facebook picture for whatever reason, I mean, you can fill out a form on Facebook and tell them to stop, but more often than not, You can't win. It's a losing battle when people just take your images and run with them.
Well, in a non-commercial aspect, or even in commercial, let me try to put a positive spin on this. You know you've arrived if people are stealing your stuff.
I guess so. I guess that's one way to look at it.
That is one way. It's a little bit negative. But so that got me to thinking about this idea of public domain. And now, do you know what public domain actually means?
Yes. This is an interesting point of confusion on the internet, and so a lot of people are ignorant to what copyright actually is and understanding copyright. And this all started in the era of Napster and file sharing, where you know just it's a digital copy, and you know we're talking copy as in copyrights, and people were freely sharing that with no compensation or permission.
Well, and see, so I suggest that it started earlier than that. I made notes. I actually wrote down Napster. It's funny you mentioned that.
Well, of course, it did start earlier, but the public mentality as far as the internet is concerned happened well before that. I mean, people were making copies of VHS tapes well before that, too. I mean, and you can even go earlier and earlier back in time where people were bootlegging movies in theaters. I'm sure that there was some sort of underground market at one point for books from unauthorized publishers. But really, the way
non-Gutenberg Bible.
Yeah, the idea of freely sharing content on the internet that was not yours to do so started, I think, with Napster.
Right.
And basically
more popular with BitTorrent and from there.
Well, exactly. And so this pervasive mentality of, okay, well, I want to watch a movie. I'm just going to find it on BitTorrent, or I'm going to use whatever file sharing system or network that I have access to get a copy of it for free. Now, of course, people do not have the rights to make those copies. The copyright belongs to somebody else. And so it's a mentality that is pervasive in the sense that people think that they're not stealing anything, especially when it's coming from like a big record label or a big movie studio. I mean, what harm are they doing in that sense? So a lot of people think of it as a victimless crime, but it is against the law. That idea, though, that mentality that is created around that also trickles down to everything on the internet. So if somebody were to type in the word Toronto into Google image search, they might find a photograph that I had taken, a nice aerial shot of Toronto. And because they see it on Google, they have the mentality that, oh, well, if it's on Google, it must be free, right? It must be public in the public domain because I searched for it publicly and I found it, and thereby I can use it for any purposes that I want.
It's taken us a while to get to that point, though. I mean, this wasn't an overnight thing. Like, you talk about Napster. When was Napster sort of released into the wild?
I don't even remember.
I'm going to say 97-ish.
I think it was later than that, to be honest. But anyhow, it was before anybody had the idea of smartphones, which have changed everything. It was before the internet became a place for e-commerce like it is today. The world was a very different place when Napster was created and hit us with this different mentality, and we've been running with it ever since. So what happens then is if somebody searches for my images, which are not in the public domain,
in the public, though.
They are in the public, right? Public domain very specifically means that either the creator of that work has labeled the image as public domain, which means anybody can use it for any purpose without credit or compensation or permission from the owner. Mm-hmm. And some people do that. Some people will put their images in the public domain. I know NASA, for example, almost all NASA imagery is public domain. You can use it for any purpose that you want. And there are some caveats to that, but
The fake moon photos.
I have no idea. You'd have to look in specifically which, because a lot of NASA imagery might have been a collaboration with the European Space Agency or other people that have different rules.
Stanley Kubrick.
There you go. So
I don't believe any of that. I'm only joking. For those of you putting pen to paper at home now, I'm only joking. I believe the moon landings were real.
Okay, good. I wasn't going to tear you apart on that. But The idea of public domain also comes into play where and it's different for different countries, but in Canada, before I think 1921, if anything was created as far as literature or art or music before that time period, that's when copyright laws became solidified and into the modern existence that we have. So if it was before that, then it's likely public domain for sure. If it's after that, then there are different rules that apply, like 75 years after the author's death, et cetera, that eventually your work, even though you maintain a copyright on it, will end up in the public domain. But for any living photographer today that does not want their work in the public domain,
wait, so 75 years after you die?
I believe so. And there are different rules for the United States, right, for example. And the U.S. has a lot of really complex copyright law that I think started in 1923. But the complexities are – and I'm just going to make this up just to make it sound complex. But in like the 47th year of copyright, if you file to extend the copyright, then it will be extended for X amount of additional years, et cetera, et cetera. Mm-hmm. All of this was put into place so that Mickey Mouse would stay in copyright.
But so why in Canada? Why? What is it around the world? I mean, I know it's like Beethoven is in the public domain,
right?
I think I say that with authority, but pretty sure.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure he was not born and composing in the 1900s.
Sure, no, but I mean, there could be some sort of a loophole. Like, no, we kind of like Beethoven, so we're going to hang on to it. But what would be the purpose of having this art or any creation fall into the public domain after the death? Why couldn't the family just hang on to it in perpetuity?
You know what? I think the same things happen with patents. You know, patents do expire, mm-hmm. and when they expire, then they are able to be, utilized by anybody
legally,
else.
I mean, legally, but what's the to humanity? What's the benefit?
A good example of this would be content that might not necessarily be the most famous content in the world, but if it's 75 years after the creator's death, then that person and all of their works, they might have started to have been forgotten. Maybe the family doesn't even realize or hold tight to it anymore. And they can. A great example, and this hits kind of close to home for me, is a Vermont photographer, Wilson A. Bentley, who was known very well for his work photographing snowflakes. And that was, like, his work is over 100 years old, and it's in the public domain. Yet the Bentley Museum will sell you prints. They will make Christmas ornaments, and there's all sorts of merchandising that they still have. They have the ability to do that. And so if the family or the estate of Wilson Bentley wants to continue to profit off of that and have the images and everything else come directly from the source, they're still able to do that. It just means that everybody else would be able to do so as well.
But no one thinks of it.
No one thinks of it. That doesn't stop them. Like I, in my book on snowflakes, I've got some of Bentley's snowflakes as just an example on one of the pages, and it was free for me to do that. Of course, I've credited him, but I wouldn't have even needed to do that because his images are in the public domain. Mm-hmm. It's interesting, too, because if you look back, a lot of famous quotes that you might see from authors like Oscar Wilde lots of famous quotes. If you type like quotes in online and you find a whole list of them, Mark Twain, etc., the reason why these are so prolific today is because they're in the public domain. Nobody needs permission to publish them or republish in any context, in any shape or form. They were great authors of their time. There's no question about that. There have been many better authors since, I can arguably say. But you don't find them quoted as often because you would need permission from the author in certain contexts in order to do so.
I see.
So public domain ends up making the work well after the death of many of these people continually known and shareable and usable. And I think that's a good thing. I have no issues with that. But when I'm alive and I'm working and I'm trying to build a career and using photography as my livelihood, I maintain the copyright to my work. And unfortunately, the internet does not respect that as well as I would like it to.
Okay, but going back to the music part of that, music and movies, like to me, it's obviously it's the movie part that hits home because that's kind of where I work. But what did the idea, the false idea, the public's false idea of public domain, what did that do to the music/movie industry?
Well, it transformed it quite rapidly, actually. You know, you don't find many stores where you can walk in and buy CDs. Of course, we can purchase things online on iTunes and many other venues. But it became so easy to illegally obtain a copy of a song or movie that it drastically changed how people not only received the content, how they they downloaded online instead of going into a store, and it changed the entire profit margin system for how music and movies were sold. Now they've found a balance, and I'm glad that they have, in the sense that the answer was to make it equally as easy to pay for it. Mm-hmm. So, you know, if I go onto iTunes and I can just buy a single song for a dollar or however they decide to label it as from an artist, and I can pay a dollar for that song, and it would take me probably less time to have that now automatically in my iTunes library in perpetuity. And it's simple, it's easy, and I am paying the artist, or at least the artist's label at that time. So their answer was to combat the piracy by making it as easy and efficient as possible to make the transaction happen. Same thing has happened with the movie industry as well.
Mm-hmm. Now, is this good or bad?
I think that it's a good thing in those industries because the piracy is still there. It will never go away. You know, you look at how many times, for example, Game of Thrones has been pirated when a new episode would come out of any hit series like that. The numbers are probably in the many millions. And that's money that HBO does not receive. But it's because getting a subscription to HBO is difficult.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it costs money, and you might not want it for just that. You know, my wife and I, we watch Netflix all the time, and that's where we consume a lot of our content. And of course, Netflix has whatever arrangements that they pay to have that content available to us, and that's fantastic. If there's something that we want to watch, we don't have a cable subscription. So we like to stay up to date on The Walking Dead, and so we buy a season of that on iTunes. And right. We're able to pay money to have that in our iTunes library the second that it's available to us, which is a day after broadcast, and that's fine. We don't mind paying for one or two seasons of a television show every year instead of getting the cable subscription.
Even though in a year and a half it'll come out on Netflix that you already pay for anyway.
Right. Well, I mean, for things like The Walking Dead, there's always the things like, you'd have to avoid spoilers.
No, I did the exact same thing. For me, it was Mad Men. I happen to be a big fan of Mad Men, and so I would do the exact same. Being over here in Germany, it's a much different situation. It isn't on television. So even if I got AMC or that's same as Walking Dead, right? AMC.
Yeah.
And so I couldn't even get it if I wanted it. But so yeah, I was happy. I was happy to pay for it now at $30 or something for the season. I don't know.
Yeah, and you make the barrier of entry very easy for people to give you money, mm-hmm. And then people will do so. And so that's how they've been kind of combating piracy to some degree.
And so the other part of it, though, is that it oddly, the way to combat piracy has been not just to make the barrier to entry low, but to make the quality of the content outstanding.
Exactly.
So if you compare the content, like the media in general, the music, the television, the movies, now to say 20 years ago, now it is amazing. Like there's so many different things out there. There's so much variety, and the quality is just it's either great or it isn't. Like you know right away. Like there's some stuff that is bad. There's no question. But in general, the stuff that goes is really fantastic, and people want to pay for it.
Exactly. And so if I wanted to find like an episode of an old TV show or something that I found interesting and I could not find it on Netflix and I could not find it on iTunes, well, then there's a chance that I might pirate it because right. I can't find an easy way to obtain it legally. And I think that's one of the things that if we bring it back to photography, people find it very, very easy to search on Google, find an image that they want, right click, save it to their desktop, put it on a banner, put it on their website, put it anywhere that they want. And it becomes very difficult for a photographer to make the licensing process of that work as easy as it would be to steal it.
For now, unless you invent something to fix that.
Well, see, one of the big issues is it is easy to license an image on like stock photo agencies, MicroStock specifically, like iStock Photo. You can pay a couple of bucks for a photograph. Mm-hmm. I've stopped having my images listed on there when I had one of my snowflake photographs on the cover of the journal Nature. Was it the Nature Structural and Molecular Biology? And I got paid about $1.50 for it.
Really?
Yeah. And
what did they license it for? Do you know?
They licensed it for like $5 or something.
Right.
I mean, those journals are fairly low production run, so you wouldn't need a huge extended license for it. And I got pennies pretty much compared to what I would normally license it for. And in fact, I only found out because they did give me credit on their website. And I found a referral link when I was searching through my website statistics to the journal Nature, and I investigated and I found it. And then I figured, well, wouldn't that be nice to have a copy of that? Just, you know, I know I only made a couple of bucks on it, but to put that on my wall. So how much does a copy cost? Well, if I wanted to buy a single issue of that journal, it would cost me something like $300.
Really?
Yeah. So I emailed
you'd be better off emailing and saying, hey, you know what? Don't pay the license fee. Just send me a copy.
Well, I mean, they've already paid the licensing fee and everything else, but I did email them and I asked them for a complimentary copy because my photo was on the cover and they sent me one. And so thank you, Journal Nature, Structural and Molecular Biology, for doing so. But it was exactly at that moment that I stopped licensing my images on stock photo agencies because while, yes, it is very easy for people to license my work, I get so little from it. Mm-hmm. And so since then, I've been kind of on a rights managed system where it's very easy. People find an image on my website, there's a little button that says license this image, and they can fill out a form, and that'll give me some basic information, and I'll come up with a price based on what they want to use it for and how many eyeballs might be on it, etc. And I typically base those prices on stock photo price calculators. There's a lot of them out there. I use one from Getty Images to come up with a value. Now, the price for a single off photograph from Getty Images is usually far greater than what I end up licensing the image for. But I use that as a starting point. I say, okay, well, if I plug in all of the values for what you want to use this for, Getty Images spits out this industry standard price. Mm-hmm. And then I discount off of that. So at least they start with an industry standard. And then I come up with a price that I feel, based on their usage, is more fitting of the subject, whether they're a nonprofit or whether they have some very specific usage in mind that is more limited. Then I come up with a price, and we work back and forth on that. Unfortunately, the number of people that contact me directly to license a photograph is far less than the number of people that simply take my images and misappropriate them. They put them, you know, in commercial usage. I've had them printed in calendars. I've had them used in websites. I've had them printed on brochures. Somebody even took one of my images and used it on their own business card.
I'm sorry to laugh. It's not funny for you. But that's the audacity of that. Now, see, the reason I thought there's one photo I have in mind that made me think of this as a topic quite a while ago is kind of, and it happens every Canada Day on Facebook.
Yeah, so you're talking about my maple leaf flag photo.
Your maple leaf. Now the problem with your maple leaf flag photo is I wish I had thought of it. Like, it is an amazing photo. I know it's shared so often that you don't get nearly enough credit for it.
Thank you. And I'm not 100% certain if I'm the first one to come up with the idea, but when I had searched online for other versions of that, I couldn't find any. And so
you really search. See, I don't know if you know this. I invented the Brennizer method a scant 2 years after Ryan Brennizer had already invented it. But I invented it on my own. Do you know what that is?
I don't. So I'm in the dark on this one.
Oh, okay. So I didn't call it. If I had actually called it the Brennizer method, that would have been insane. I came up with an idea. I thought, you know, who needs a medium format camera if I just take 9 images with my full frame 5D Mark II
like just shift it around and stitch them together, I will have a medium format photo.
Yeah, I do that for artwork reproduction photography.
Yeah, so that was my move. I invented that years ago. I invented it, and I talked about it on the show like a year ago or 2 years ago, and then a bunch of our listeners emailed in and said, oh, no, that's the Brennizer method. And so I said, okay, great. So I talked to this guy. I got in touch with this guy, Ryan Brennizer, very, very famous wedding photographer who actually invented it, coined, and somebody called it that. I don't even know if he called it. Someone else called it that. And found out that I invented it after him, but completely on my own.
No, but here's the thing too, Alan. I don't mind if somebody takes the concept that I used. Mm-hmm. Mine is red maple leaves on snow. And I've seen people imitate this idea by putting it on birch bark or anything else. And I'm biased.
Flattering.
I'm biased to say that I think mine is the better of any of the attempts at it. But
I don't think people understand how much effort you put into it. So
I don't mind people taking the same idea and making their own version of it. I'm totally cool with that.
Nobody cares. McDonald's says, go ahead, make a better hamburger. And everybody does. And McDonald's
just don't steal the secret sauce recipe for the Big Mac.
Of course.
Right. And so I don't want people to steal my image, the exact image that I've created.
Right.
And so when it comes to Remembrance Day and Canada Day, you find that image gets shared extensively on Facebook, on Twitter, and everywhere else. And there's very little that I can do about those personal infringements. Because while I could, and I've got a great lawyer based in Toronto here, and he handles all of my commercial infringements, I could pay him to pursue these personal infringements. But I would lose far more in the court of public opinion than I would ever gain in the court of law.
Sure.
And so you have to juggle that back and forth, because while people are ignorant to copyright, they can get mighty annoyed and angry that you are telling them that they have done something wrong.
Mm-hmm. On Facebook, no less.
On Facebook, no less. You know, I had one guy who was using my Maple Leaf flag image as his profile picture.
Mm-hmm.
And I typically don't – I mean, if somebody points it out to me very specifically that this person is misusing your image, I go and I talk to them and I try to say, okay, well, please don't misuse my photograph, blah, blah, blah. And this one guy said, well – you know, tough beans. I found this on Google, so you should keep a better handle on your images and don't let them get out on the internet, because I can take it for free. It's like, well, okay.
But see, that's what leads us to this conversation. Now,
I wasn't done with this guy though.
Okay.
Because in that scenario, he's totally being a jerk. So Facebook has a form that you can fill out to protect your intellectual property. And you can say, okay, well, it's this link that's infringing on my copyright, blah, blah, blah. It's a whole form you have to fill out. And they're usually pretty good at responding within a day or two. So then they pull the image down. And this guy has the audacity to put it back up.
Uh-huh.
And so he puts it back up and blocks me so that I can't see him. But I can still see that he's put the profile picture back up. So then this goes back and forth around six iterations, I think, where I send out the form referencing the previous time that it's been removed. And finally, on like the sixth time, I say in the notice, and this is going over about a month time period, that this person will not stop infringing on this image, and simply taking it down is not enough of a deterrent for him. You need to take stricter action. And Facebook deleted his account.
Ah.
So
what's
there you go.
Name? What's his name?
I'm not going to name any names, but I felt
Schwartz.
Good about that. I'm not sure if they deleted it. They might have suspended it for a period of time, but when I went to search for that account again, it was no longer visible. So
okay, but this attitude, like here's the thing, is that.
That attitude is not pervasive, though. The attitude is people don't know they've done something wrong, and typically when you tell them that they have done something wrong, they are apologetic.
Yes.
Right?
If Napster has been around since, call it 2000, just for sake of argument, so you know, over 16 years, 15 years plus, it's taken that long. It's been around long enough that people's attitude have been, well, if it's on Google, it must be free.
Yep.
That really is. Now, that is 100% wrong. We know that. However,
it is. Now, here's something else, too. Sorry to interrupt, but I put little watermarks on most of my photographs so that it's unobtrusive. It's in the bottom right-hand corner. It's usually pretty faint, but if you're looking at the photograph, you will see it. And especially if you're going to be using it for some purpose, you will see it. A lot of times people either just leave the watermark in place or they crop it out.
Sure.
And so when they crop out the watermark, that is a double slap in the face. It's like, okay, sure. Yeah, I know this is owned by somebody else. Let's just stop anybody from seeing that.
And in terms of, I mean, you could be one of those guys who puts the watermark on 19 times across the whole image.
No, it's
stupid.
That serves the same purpose. If you go into a movie theater and you see the before the movie starts, the screen that says, "Don't pirate this movie." You mm-hmm. think that screen is going to be helpful to anybody? You think that there's a bootlegger in the audience that has their camera ready to go and sees that displayed and says, you know what, let me reconsider.
Yeah.
No, it's not going to stop anybody from stealing a photograph. It's only going to annoy the people that are there legitimately enjoying the content. So
exactly.
you do not want a watermark to obscure your image or to become any form of distraction.
I watermark all of Adam and I's photos with the two hosers on them for our challenge photos, not because we don't want people to steal them or anything, just as a handy reference to them. So if they happen across them and they can go, oh, I know where to find these guys.
Exactly. And sure, that's fine. We were talking in the last episode about somebody that had taken one of my images, a small nonprofit organization, they had been using it for around a year and a half before they actually asked for permission. And so because the image contained my watermark, they were able to find me and ask for permission. Now, they went around it an entirely, I don't know, frustrating way where they didn't tell me, they didn't apologize that the usage has been going on. They'd kind of hid that from me and I discovered it on my own. And that happens quite often as well. But I did want to say, too, about the watermarks, at least in Canada, and I'm not sure if it's going to be the same anywhere else, but a watermark, as far as the Copyright Act of Canada is concerned, can be considered rights management information. So if then you remove rights management information, the remedies as far as the Copyright Act is concerned become more strict. I think that they fall perfectly in line with having the copyright registered and then you can claim for punitive or statutory damages instead of just the actual damages on the image itself. Now, I've never had any of my copyright infringement cases go to court and they all settle outside of court mm-hmm. because when people realize commercially that they've done wrong, they're caught red-handed. They've got no defense, and so that becomes kind of a win-win situation. You know, I don't have to pay court fees, and the people get to sign a paper saying that they're clean and clear of any wrongdoing.
Now, how often does it when these cases that you have? How often are they knowingly stealing from you and getting caught, or how many times is it just, man, we were stupid?
That's hard to say because nobody's going to admit that they did it maliciously. Mm-hmm. But I do know for a fact that some organizations out there, from a business standpoint, it makes more sense. Let's say they're licensing 100 images. Mm-hmm. Well, it makes more sense for them to not license those 100 images, to just steal them, knowing that there will be, say, two or three copyright settlements that result from that. But the total payout for those two or three settlements will be far less than the total cost of licensing them all.
Right.
So it makes more business sense to steal them than to license them because it's cheaper.
Yay.
Yeah.
That is terrible. So but when it comes to stealing, though, are people stealing your images, and specifically the flag image, which I have to assume the Maple Leaf has got to be your most stolen, I would assume.
It is my most stolen image. And it's funny because that's an image that I normally would never license to begin with.
Right.
I want it to stand without corporate or private interests and entanglements. I want it to just represent Canada, and I don't want it to be associated with brands or anything like that.
Oh, the irony there.
And then it just gets stolen for exactly that purpose. I mean, I associated it with my own brand. I mean, it's on the back of my business cards. And right. So it is part of my brand structure. Yeah.
I don't have business cards. But, okay, so when it comes to stealing, is stealing always stealing? Do you make a distinction between, like, let's say some soccer mom in one of the flyover states sees your image and goes, oh boy, Canada Day, and puts it up on her banner for, you know, a temporary banner on her Facebook for a day.
or somebody takes it and sells calendars.
Well, okay, and so that's the line of commercial usage, right?
Sure.
So, and I would say if you're a business and people go to your website for your business purposes, and you take that image and you put it on your website saying, "Happy Canada Day, we've got this great Canada Day sale, come and check us out," and they use my image there, mm-hmm. well, that's commercial usage as well. But for the person that just, you know, the soccer mom that puts it on her page for a day, that is personal usage. And while in the eyes of the law is still illegal, there's nothing that you can do about it.
I'm not talking about legally. I'm talking about sort of personally for you, morally to you. Do you draw a distinction between corporate and unintentional personal use?
You know, if people post the image and they say, you know, "Happy Canada Day, this great image from Don Komarechka, check it out." Mm-hmm. You know what? That's great. That is exposure for me. It is illegal and what have you, but I'm not going to do anything about it. But when people could have licensed the photograph for a particular purpose and they opted not to and just take it without permission, then, and sometimes people will use it commercially and they'll also credit my name. It's like, okay, so you realize that
these are stupid people.
You realize that you've informed me and my lawyer and anybody else is looking at that, that, you know, this image belongs to somebody else. Very purposefully, you have set out that directive, and yet you're using it without that permission. Sometimes they've even spelled my name wrong. It's like, "This great is a photo credit to Dan Komarechka." Like, that's great. That's who's this Dan guy?
He's almost as good.
yeah.
Right. Okay. So, see, back in the old days, there was no internet, so you didn't have to deal with this, you know. And so again, that, the same was with music. Was okay, great. The Grateful Dead put out an album, and you know, you could bring your LP over and tape, you know, record it to a cassette or record a song off the radio, and it wasn't that harmless, it was much more harmless.
That's right.
Then the internet came along, and now we could do duplication like that. However, the difference being, I think, is that back then, or not even back then, now.
But back then, the usage, the infringement, would almost entirely be personal. There would be mm-hmm. very little in the way of commercial infringements. And yes, right. You would have the guys selling bootlegs on the street corner. And so that, I guess, could be considered commercial infringement. But like 99% of any infringements then would be personal. Mm-hmm. And now, businesses, again, a lot of small businesses on the internet, people are just ignorant to copyright laws. They don't know what copyright actually means. And that same idea of if it's on the internet, it must be free, is a public mentality. So this, I want to actually make a bit of a public service announcement about this whole thing to empower anybody listening to figure out how they can go and find if their images have been misappropriated in any way. And it's really easy to do. Have you done this with your images before, Alan?
No, I'm worried I would do it and then I'd find out that nobody did. That would sting.
Well, you know, I would prefer if nobody would steal my work. However, I don't want to say that it's part of my business model because it isn't. It's sort of an opportunity thing. But my biggest copyright settlement this year was, and I can't name names, but was for $5,000.
Okay.
And so that's that paid for my whole studio reno. You know,
sure.
So how do you do this? How do you find the copyright infringements? And most of them are far less of a settlement than that. But you can use Google, Bing, or other services to do what's called a reverse image search. So if you were to go to Google and you go to images.google.com, and normally that's where you would do a Google image search. Type a word in and you see what images come back. But if you drag and drop one of your photographs over the search bar, it will use your image as a search term and find every place where that image exists on the internet.
Oh, wow.
So if you find, like, when I do that with some of my images, of course, it'll show up where I've officially posted it on my website and on Flickr and anywhere else. And then it will start to show me places where that image has been posted without my permission. So if you have any of your most popular images, you can simply drag it onto Google as a search term and find out where it is currently hiding on the internet. And Bing, I think it's bing.com/images or whatever their image search is, will function in a very, very similar way. So those are the two big search engines out there that can let you find your images where they exist online without your permission. There are purpose-built tools for this as well. One of them is TinEye, T-I-N-E-Y-E, and that's all they do is do image matching and try to find out where it exists online. It's a bit more cumbersome as far as the interface, what they're showing you as results, but I typically will use all three of these because they all reference different databases, and sometimes you'll find one on one site but not on another. So I'll typically spend a day every maybe 2 months and just trying to take my most popular images and see where they might exist online. The challenge, though, is if you find an image that has been infringed on, if it's like some of my images are very iconically Canadian. So I've got a lawyer here in Canada that works very, very closely with me and settles these things quite readily. However, what if somebody steals my image in Poland?
Mm-hmm.
Right. It becomes very difficult. And yes, there are certain conventions. The Berne Convention is one that basically means copyright status from one country that agrees to these conventions and treaties exists in other countries as well.
And does so, China play ball?
I don't think so. I don't think Russia does either. Enforcing copyright in Russia would be walking up to somebody with a gun, I think.
Don't do it.
Yeah. So in this case, though, I use a service, and they've been pretty good, Image Rights International. And so that's just imagerights.com. For anything that I can't face locally, copyrights in the U.S. or abroad, they have settled cases in Poland for me. They don't have lawyers in all countries around the world, but it makes it so simple for me to enforce the copyright by basically just filling out a form for that particular infringement and then letting them take it away. And they assess it, seeing if it's worth pursuing, and then pass it on to a foreign partner if it's outside of the U.S. because that's where they're based. And I've had some successes from them. And that even if I don't get any money from this process,
mm-hmm.
the fact that they engage the infringer almost universally, the infringer will take the image off of their website and they know they've done wrong. So at the very least, I have defended my copyright, even if I don't get anything for it. And I think more photographers need to do that in order to change the mentality of the public at large.
I think that needs to happen, just sort of the herd mentality of it. Because everybody, you know, like immunizing your kids or something like that, like you need to do that if that comes up. Now, here's the thing is, why don't you just not put your stuff on the internet, Don?
Well, because then nobody will ever see it and I won't be able to make a business out of it. You know, a lot of what photographers do today is brand building, and it's about building an audience. And that audience is online. That is how you have to build your work.
Everything is online.
Everything is online. You cannot be a photographer, at least a successful one from a business standpoint today, without having your work shared online and shared as prolifically as you can. So I love when people click the share button on Facebook and share my image onto their own page with their own comments or whatever. That the structure for that is perfect because mm-hmm. that links back to my profile. And that is exactly how that's supposed to work on Facebook and Google Plus, and retweeting an image. And all of that is exactly the functionality that keeps the original owner or photographer in the loop, without breaking that connection at all, that goes right back to them. And so the more retweets or shares that my work receives, then the larger my audience will be. And it's my audience. It's not somebody taking the image, saving it to their desktop, and then sharing it on their own. I'm completely removed from that equation.
Right.
And here's the kicker. As photographers go, if somebody takes my image and misappropriates it, uses it on their own Facebook page or whatever without mentioning my name, I'm invisible. I have absolutely no connection to my work. If somebody were to steal a movie or a song, then yes, of course, the artists and the actors receive no money, but they receive admiration and notoriety because if I were to go and steal, I don't know, the latest I don't know what I'm not a big music guy, but the latest Justin Bieber song, if I were to steal that, because I am a huge Justin Bieber fan and I am not, but the artist stands through, and the artist still gets the recognition in the eyes of the infringer, the admiration. And maybe that person steals all of that artist's songs, but then goes to their concert to see them in concert. And so they are still being respected in some way by building their brand when their work is stolen. But as a photographer goes, when your work is stolen, you are completely removed from that equation. Nobody knows who you are. Nobody appreciates you as the artist itself.
If you're good, I mean, I kind of feel that when a photographer is really good at what they do, they become invisible. It's any artist. If any artist, you look at that and go, oh well, yeah, that's clearly a Warhol. You think that's more about him being Warhol than it is about the art. And also a photographer who takes a really phenomenal photo. Like, you look at your photo, you don't think, well, that's just Don being Don. You think, wow, that's an amazing photograph.
Right. And so if the photographer isn't directly represented in the work, then when that work is stolen, then it can actually be detrimental to the photographer's brand, because then this is floating around the internet. Maybe it goes viral. Mm-hmm. But if it goes viral outside of the regular constructs of sharing it in social media, then none of that funnels back to the artist. Mm-hmm. And so it's the image that becomes famous and not the person that created it. And that's a big problem.
I can see it being a massive problem. Okay. Yeah. But, you know, like the internet I guess it's kind of a necessary evil. You have to put yourself out there. You have to be in front of as many people as you can. Just don't steal from Don. That's what we're saying here.
And if anybody asks you to use an image for free, just say no. I mean, I mean to say that a lot of times I get approached by people, whether it be a nonprofit or a small outfit, that they want to use one of my images, and they say, oh, well, we'll give you credit. And so that'll give you exposure, right? Well, that does not fly. So at that point, you know that somebody appreciates your work enough to use it, but does not associate monetary value with it. They think that the value of simply giving you exposure would be enough. So a great example is I had some church somewhere in the U.S., somewhere in the heartland, contacted me because they wanted to use one of my images on a brochure for their Christmas some such or other. And I gave them a price that, I mean, it's just for a small community church. I gave them a price of $80. Mm-hmm. And they said, no, we don't have a budget for that. Can we still use it for free? And I said, no. I mean, I give to charities, and I donate my time to certain charitable organizations as well. But I don't want to be forced into being to the charitable usage of a photograph. If you're asking me to use it, and I don't know who you are, I'm not going to just donate the use of my image. I'm going to come up with a price that in certain cases it's very difficult to say no for. Mm-hmm. And if they're getting brochures printed, they have a budget. They do. I mean, they're paying somebody to produce that. And so why am I being cut out of that equation? So if somebody asks you to use your image for free, come up with a number. I don't care if it's a low number, just any number at all, in order for you to get something out of it and for people to realize that they are not free. And exposure should not be a trade-off for the usage of your photograph. The only exception for that would be if National Geographic were to come to me and say, Don, we want to use one of your images on the cover of Nat Geo, but we don't want to pay you for it. I think they can get away with it, but I don't think anybody else would be able to pull that card.
I've never done that. I've never had people approach. Well, I guess I have, but I've never said yes to it. But I've gone the other way where I've basically said, hey, like, I was hired to shoot video on a project for Adam Carolla, and I purposely went to England and met him there and brought my photo stuff too. Knowing that I'm gonna take a portrait of him. That's my plan. I'm not hired for that. I'm just hired to go and shoot video, which I did. But I said, hey, we got 5 minutes here. Let's go snap a portrait photo of you in your racing suit, and you can have it. Like, I want you to have this. And it got used. Like, he went to some event with Shaquille O'Neal. There's Shaquille's portrait up there, and then Carolla's portrait next to it. And mine was better, by the way, than Shaquille's. but for me,
and see, that's fantastic because it was your initiative to do that. And so I've taken images like there's this wonderful painting from a Canadian artist that's currently living in Texas that is of Sir Robert Barry, which is the military captain that the city of Barry, my town, is named after. And so the city commissioned the painting to be created. And then they came to me to do the artwork reproduction photography for this painting. Mm-hmm. And I originally came to them with a fairly large price to do the reproduction photography. But when I had that image in my hands, or the actual painting, like it was just such a work of art that I was just thrilled to have sitting in my studio. I cut down the price of the artwork reproduction to 1/5 of what it was, only because I loved the project so much and I wanted it to succeed as best as it could. Mm-hmm. And they came back to me and said, well, no, how about this? You know, charge us the full rate and then donate the difference back to the project and we can give you a charitable receipt. And it's like, all right, well, that works. So, I mean, I'm more than happy to support projects that I am personally involved in or that I appreciate, that I can take that on my own initiative to do so. I've helped out with the Help Portrait initiative in our hometown every year for 3 or 4 years, I believe. I'm not the photographer. I do all the prints and burning images onto CDs for people. But I help that. I donate my time and my efforts and my energies to these projects, and I expect nothing back. And I encourage photographers to continue to do that. But when somebody knocks on your door and asks for something for free, I have a different mentality about it.
So what we're saying is if it's on Google, it's not public domain necessarily.
It might be.
It might be. If it's the song Happy Birthday, it might be.
Well, there is an option. Yeah, Happy Birthday is a bit encumbered with some debates, but in Google, when you're searching, there is, if you go into the advanced settings, there is an option to show only images that are in the public domain. There is a checkbox for that. Now, I'm not sure if you want to rely on Google's interpretation of what the public domain is. I have no idea how accurate that is, mm-hmm. but you're better off finding one of those images in the public domain by clicking that checkbox. And then you might do a little bit of research yourself to confirm it. But that, if you want to use an image and you don't want to pay anybody for it, images are out there and photographers have licensed their work in the public domain because that is how they choose to do it. They might not be making a living at it, or they might be doing something for a charitable purpose or for the sake of science and betterment of mankind, and they want the image to be used in certain ways. It's there. So you can click that checkbox in the advanced settings and see only the images that are in public domain.
So it exists, but it's not ubiquitous.
Saying. And don't so assume. Google doesn't turn that on by default, of course, because if they only showed images in the public domain, then
no one would go
there.
You're
getting rid of 99% of the material out there.
Oh, the irony. All right, Don, thanks a lot for giving us the insight. Where can people go to find and license your stuff? Let's be honest. Go find it, see it, hopefully license it.
Okay, so my main website is doncom.ca, donkom.ca.
We'll put a link up, of course.
And in there, you'll find, on that website, you will find my three most stolen images are in there. The Maple Leaf flag is one. An aerial fisheye photograph of Toronto Harbor is another. And then a small little plant growing up out of a train track is the third most stolen image. So if you like those photographs, please don't steal them, but contact me and we can work something out.
Wonderful. Go from there. All right, Don, thanks a lot.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me on.
And we're back. See, now it exists.
Okay.
What'd you think? Awesome, huh?
Yeah, did you get a chance to ask him why he hasn't emailed me the Barry hockey team's photograph, the Barry Colts?
I don't think he's interested. I think we ambushed him on the air last week, and he's going to not send that.
Yeah, every day I've been just quickly checking my inbox, but just giving those mm-hmm. of you an update at home, still no Don Komarechka, Barry Colts winning goal photo. So
Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
I don't think I gave him enough of an intro at the beginning.
What? the team photographer.
Do people know who Don is? No. The beginning of this little intro, I just rolled in like we all know who Don is.
Well, I think if they're at what number are we on? 300 and something?
310.
So if they listen to three, I hopefully they didn't just jump in at 310. If you caught,
we can. We invite you to.
If you caught 309, then you already introduced Don. So.
All right, but
introduce him again. So just do it. Do it.
That
now.
Was Don. I'm gonna reverse. I'm gonna tail slate this one and just say that was Don Komarechka, friend of the show. Shoots the snowflakes.
Yeah,
the snowflakes. And other stuff. But you know him for the macro snow. That's where he's widely known. But he does all kinds of stuff. Infrared. He's pushing the edge of the envelope in a bunch of different aspects of photography. But you likely know him from the snowflakes, and that's your. I guess that's your port of entry when it comes to Don, and just go from there and check out his books, check him out on Twitter, all the social media. He's all over it.
So right.
Check it out. We'll have a link on our site to his website.
Do you think he's going to listen to this episode?
I have no clue. I'm assuming he wants to know. He'll listen to the bookend part of it to see if we rip him. Which we didn't. I don't think we did.
No.
We?
No, I just mentioned that he hasn't sent me the photo.
Yeah, it's not really a rip, more of just truth bomb.
Yeah. You're right. Okay.
So there you go. So I say next week's challenge, but it's not next week's challenge. Next week, I'm going to warn you now, if you want to hear about photography stuff, do not listen to the next week's show.
Next week's show will not be photography talk.
Next week's show is the sixth edition of our Christmas special.
Yeah, the one the hardcore fans love to hate.
I think it's pretend hate. It might be real hate. I don't care. Pretend hate and real hate, it's all hate. It's fine.
Yeah.
You know, it doesn't matter. Artificial sweetener still tastes sweet.
That's true.
Right? So whether it's pretend hate or not, I think it's the NutraSweet of hate. NutraHate. Is that a thing?
Now it is.
Now it is. Hashtag copyright. Yeah. So basically what we're saying is...
Don't listen. Please don't listen.
I'm daring you to not listen. Although, if you've been with us from the beginning and have interacted with us, you know, through email, Facebook, Twitter, standing outside my house, stuff like that, your name might get mentioned next week.
Wow.
So you don't want to miss that. So you don't want to not listen either. That's the rub.
Yeah.
Spoiler alert, we didn't mention any of your names. Or did we?
I don't know.
Probably at the end.
Cliffhanger.
Cliffhanger, yeah. I forget if it's in the middle or the end. It's just somewhere. If you find it, go ahead and have a listen. let us know. Don't, because you'll be disappointed. Yes. So... there's that. So in 2 weeks, the photo challenge will be Christmas lights.
Right, because we don't want to do a photo challenge on the Christmas show because that would involve something photography related.
Yeah, we want nothing of any value to be on that show.
Right.
You will learn nothing.
I think maybe you will. I thought this year maybe there was a nugget or two, but maybe am I misremembering?
I don't remember either.
Okay.
It's already been recorded. That's what we see. We actually, in order to make it genuine, more real, Adam and I recorded it while I was in Vancouver. We wanted to do a face-to-face Christmas episode because we don't do that very, maybe half the time.
The best part is it was so memorable that I can't remember any of what we talked about.
Yeah. No, what did we talk about?
We'll have to listen.
That's not going to happen. I don't even think I mentioned my own name, so why would I listen? Wow. We're bad at selling. That's what I've noticed. Unless we're doing so far in reverse that people are got to be curious to know how terrible it's going to be.
Catch up in 2 weeks, everybody.
In 2 weeks, yeah. You know what you will learn if you listen? You'll learn how valuable your time is. So there you go. Do yourself a favor.
Okay.
Christmas lights in 2 weeks. Meanwhile, Adam, where can people go and find your stuff?
AdamSchwartz.ca. And how about
your stuff? Look forward to the snow pics on... Nothing but snow pics on AdamSchwartz.ca. Mine will be unchanged because I'm a busy guy at this time of year especially, but you'll see some pictures I took 4 years ago at alanatridge.com or the two of us at twohosers.com. And that one we do update every single week. We can find the links, the photos, everything we just talked about. So that's it. Until next week, get out there and make better photos.